Hi, Rob Cornelis here, and thanks for tuning in to another edition of Game Face Execs. Now, excuse this oversimplification, but for your business to be profitable, two fundamentals have to be achieved. You have to increase revenues and decrease costs. For more than 2.5 decades, I've been trusted to help organizations grow revenues through sales. But my guest this week is at the other end of the spectrum, helping companies everywhere reduce expenses so they can keep more of those revenues. I'm a big admirer of the work done by Mark Friedman, consultant and author of the recent bestseller, Expense to Profit. As the forensic accountant for expenses, Mark and his team find the hidden costs keeping companies from becoming wildly profitable. Check him out. It's my pleasure to welcome a friend and a fellow author, a best-selling author, Mark Friedman, to Game Face Execs podcast. Mark is based in the Washington, D.C. metro market, and so glad you've been willing and able to join us today. Mark, welcome to Game Face Execs podcast.
Rob, it's great to be here. So exciting.
You are someone in a field that before you and I met, before we became friends, I got to admit, I didn't quite understand that your business even existed, the type of work that you're in. So let me kind of set this up for our listeners and our viewers. They all know that I'm in the business of producing revenues. That's what I do with my clients, and that's what I assist them in. But on the other hand, you're on the opposite side of the ledger, so to speak. You assist your clients in reducing expenses.
Talk about two opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
Right. So I think we bookend people. So if people would just hire the both of us, we could cover all facets for them, couldn't we?
Think about how much success that business would have.
There you go. All right, so we're making a good promotional team already. So, Mark, you are a certified expense reduction consultant.
Yes, sir.
Again, a title I did not hear before you and I met. So, describe for my audience what that means.
Sure. So, the expense reduction process is kind of, I like to say, it's forensic accounting for expenses. And there are specific methodologies and different strategies that you use when you look at how businesses spend money. So obviously, like anything else, you can be a certified financial planner. You can be, you know, there's all different kinds of certifications out there. I felt it important when I changed my business from being a business advisor to just specializing in the expense side of the equation, which is where I really always loved being to begin with when I helped businesses. I felt it was important that I actually learn the processes that were going to make the most amount of success for my clients when I was reducing their expenses.
So I failed to mention that you're the founder and CEO of Expense to Profit, the name of your business, which is also the name of your best-selling book, which we'll talk about here. But before you launched the business, can you talk to us a little bit about your background,
what you've
done professionally?
Yeah, so originally I went to school. My first 2 years in school were in Rochester at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, and I was in accounting. I was going to become a CPA. Then I realized in my sophomore year when I came to the Washington, D.C. area with my roommates who were twins, well, why am I in Rochester? I got to move to Washington. I went back, got applications, and I transferred to George Washington University. And then my goal was to be a tax lawyer, to specialize in tax law. So obviously, I then took curriculum for both business and accounting and law. And then when I got done, I was like, yeah, but I don't like sitting behind a desk. So I was like, okay, so now what, right? Another pivot. So I spent 40 years now in the finance world, helping people and businesses be more successful, but just from both an from an operational standpoint. While I don't have the talents that you have on the revenue side, I did that for some clients, but not very successful. And about 10 years ago, one of my very good friends, who also happens to be on the revenue side of things that lives around the corner from me, said, you know, why don't you just concentrate on the expense side? And I think you're really good at that. And you ought to talk to this guy. His name's Phil Gross. So Phil belonged to a franchise group called Expense Reduction Analysts. And I thought about joining them. And of course, you know, with any franchise, there's a fee up front, not a big deal. A lot of dollars, but not a big deal. What bothered me more than that was they were going to take 18 cents out of every dollar that I earned in fees. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. Anyhow, so I said to Phil, I said, look, I'm going to get in this business. Do you mind if I hire you guys and some of your partners to help me out when I need, you know, specialists in those different categories? Sure, no problem. If I can't make it on my own, then, you know, then maybe I'll think about hooking up with you guys. And so that was it. So Expense to Profit was formed, and it's been very positive ever since.
So you and I, when we've visited in the past about our respective businesses, I've kind of joked with you about Expense to Profit, that the cynic in me says, well, if you're an expense reduction expert, it sounds to me like you're the Grim Reaper. You come into an organization and you simply look at headcount and say, we have to have a reduction in force. Boom. Well, I'll reduce your expenses that way. You've done a very good job explaining to me that's not exactly how it works. So can you kind of clear that misconception for anyone who's listening right now who may have the same that I did?
Yeah, sure. So one of the areas that we stay away from is belly buttons. We're not worried about how many belly buttons you have or don't have. We're assuming that you as a business know how many belly buttons you should have, right? And you've probably already gone through that exercise, especially today. You've gone through that exercise to make sure that you've right-sized your business from a employee standpoint. Our goal is to look at how are you buying the things that you're buying to use in your business, whether it's a service-related thing or whether it's a commodity-related thing, meaning wireless cell phones, telecom, data services, leased cars, logistics, if you use your business as, you know, high user of UPS or FedEx or one of those types of services. And so we're looking at how are you spending money and where are you getting them from? And 89% of the time, we're able to affect very positive change from three aspects. It's our, what we call our three-legged stool of our process. First leg is quality of product. Must be equal or better than you're currently getting. Second leg is the service levels. Are the service levels what you expect? If they're not, we then help get those to the levels that you want. And if they are, we make sure that they stay at those levels or excel to higher levels. And then the third piece is price. Price is always last, because if you can't get what you want when you need it, what good is price?
So then when you engage with a client and they engage with you, help me understand, who's your primary contact? I presume at the outset, it would be some of the folks in the C-suite, the owner, the CEO, the CFO, perhaps. Are you working more with the folks on the finance side of the office or on the operations side of the office? So help us understand what that looks like.
Sure. So it really depends. We like to start right at the top of the food chain, right? So we want to talk to the business owner, the CEO, chairman of the board, whoever is that's going to drive this change that we're going to bring to the organization. Because if that person says, hey, we're doing this, there's no longer a conversation of, well, I'll get it to you in 30 days or 60 days. A great story of that is four guys own a very large mortgage company in our area. And one of the guys, although his title is chairman, said to me, yeah, I want to hire you. I'm going to hook you up with our CFO, Dave, and Dave will contact you and he'll get you what you need. And then we'll see what you come up with. And I said, well, if we don't have a meeting together with Dave and you just do a referral to Dave by email, I will be calling you in 31 days to tell you that the last 30 days, Dave hasn't contacted me. Oh, no, that'll never happen. Sure enough, 31 days later, I pick up the phone. Hey, Mike, it's Mark. Haven't heard from Dave. I can't believe that. Now, here's the even funnier part of that story. A week later, I'm at one of these, once again, on networking events. It happens to be a lunch meeting. And the guy who sits down next to me is the president of the mortgage company, just by happenstance. And I look over and I'm like, wow, that's Craig. He goes, you know who I am? I said, yeah, of course. I said, you're Craig Schmidt. You're one of the owners of the mortgage company. Yeah, he says, have we met before? I said, well, no, I actually met your partner, Mike. And, I do expense reduction. He thought that it would be a good idea if we took a look at some stuff for you. But, you know, he did an email introduction to Dave, your CFO, and I never heard from Dave. An hour and a half after I returned from that meeting, Dave called me.
Yeah, of course.
Sometimes it just depends. Even with your, when you're in the C-suite, it depends on who in the C-suite really has more leverage, right?
Wow.
Or maybe they were just embarrassed that they never called me. I don't know which, but there you have it.
Well, you seem to have a lot of fortuitous meetings there, Mark. And by the way, if you're having a hard time getting a hold of those people, maybe you need to take one of my courses in how to reach decision makers.
I should sign up for that. Absolutely.
Okay, so you work with the decision makers, the primary decision makers, but then I have to assume the actual nuts and bolts of the work cascades down throughout the organization. Is that fair?
Correct. Yeah. So then from after they make a decision, they want to move forward, then we move down to the finance department. And typically the CFO is too busy. So they'll usually push us off to a finance person, which is fine because I really need about 5 minutes of somebody's time. And it's actually probably less than that, but I always say 5 minutes because maybe they're not as efficient as other people are. So we need three things. We need an invoice. We need the contact information of the vendor. And then we need a contract if you have one. So those three things are where we start. And we always believe that getting the information from the vendor is a source of truth. Because as you're probably aware, people put things in accounting systems when they buy things, and sometimes they may get moved into different categories. And when you do an export of a report, sometimes those things get lost. We know if we go to a vendor, they know exactly what they sold you in the last 12 months. And so we're able to, and plus we get it from them electronically, and it's a lot cleaner. We get UPC codes. Because when we do analysis, we take everything down to a unit piece. And so we need to know what everything costs by each unit.
So what's the reception of those vendors when you reach out to them? How do you represent yourself?
Yeah, so we typically have ownership call. And basically, hey, we've hired these guys. You're going to be getting a call from Mark. Okay. In addition to that, they sign a letter of authorization if it says, you know, and it's addressed to each individual vendor on their letterhead that says, hey, we've hired these guys. Please treat them if they're a partner of ours. They're calling to get information provided to them in a very timely basis. And oh, by the way, they have no authority to change anything on our accounts. That kind of gives the business the comfort, as one of my government contractors has said, that you're not going to do any hanky-panky with our business, right? No, of course not. We're just getting information right now.
You mentioned earlier, Mark, that I think the number you threw out was 89%.
Yes.
So 89% of the time when you're engaging with the vendor for your client, you're not recommending or instigating any kind of change in vendor relationship. You're simply trying to find an improved relationship for both parties to it would cement that relationship for a longer term, I presume.
Absolutely, 100%. So our goal is not to displace anybody, because if you think about it from our standpoint, if you change a vendor and something goes wrong, who's going to get blamed? Me, of course, regardless of whether I had anything to do with it, because if we hadn't been involved, it would never happen. So for us, price change, service level increases, product quality increases are easy, you know, especially if they're happy with the vendor relationship. Now, if they're not happy with the vendor relationship, then of course, we take a different tact and we'll go to the marketplace to find, we'll find somebody who may be able to solve the problem. We're doing that right now for a bunch of clinics down in Florida. They've got 22 different locations. Their lab provider is one of the major providers in the country, but to them, because they only have 22 locations, they treat them as if they're like a real small business and they're not important to them. And so we're right now going to the marketplace to replace them, to find somebody who wants to be a partner that can solve their problems that they have. They're sending almost 80,000 lab tests to this company every year and growing. And you would think that would be important, but not when you're the size that you are of this very large company. And so our goal there is, you know, as I said before, it's to improve a relationship. In this case, the service levels are not great. They're certainly not proactive, they're reactive. They want somebody who's going to be a partner, who's going to, you know, help them grow their business and be a partner with them and integrate with them so that when they get reports, you know, the reports aren't being faxed in, the reports are coming in through their ER system, right? Through their electronic medical record system. And so these are the kinds of things that we look to do process improvement for clients if we have to make a change for vendors.
Before I go further, Mark, describe your team that is a part of Expense to Profit. What does your team look like?
Yeah, so my team is extremely diverse, and it's made up of guys who have spent over 20 years in their discipline, their vertical, their expense vertical. So what does that mean? So for instance, my guy who specializes in logistics spent 37 years at UPS, retired, and now he's doing consulting in the logistics space. And it doesn't matter if it's UPS or FedEx. The man started as a porter, became a truck driver, moved into management. And when he left UPS, he was the chief designer of their pricing schedules and their different tiers of how they gave people discounts. So that's the kind of guy you want to have on your team. My guy who does medical supplies spent his entire career with Cardinal Health. He was the chief pricing officer and then became the president of Cardinal Health, who's one of the largest medical supply companies in the country. And now he's been doing expense reduction for the past 12 plus years. This is the kind of people we bring to our team. And so we've got about 43 different categories, I think, that we look at on expenses. So there's almost, I always say there's no category that's safe from us. I almost thought I was going to be, that I was going to have to change that line when we were presented with an opportunity with a Boeing subcontractor. And they stress test airplane parts. And I was like, oh, I don't know anything about this. Well, what am I going to do with stress testing airplane parts? Well, the funny thing was, I sent an email out to my team, my guys, and we're all independent contractors who all have our own company, but we work on a hub and spoke system where I'm at the center. So anytime a client has an issue, they come directly to me. They don't have to worry about who they got to talk to. So I sent an email out. Hey, anybody know anything about this? And one of my guys responds back. He says, oh, I got a PhD in that. Well, not necessarily stress testing airplane parts, but stress tests. So he had a PhD in stress testing. So that was kind of a funny, like I said, I thought I was going to be stumped, right? No, not at all. And as it turned out, it was very even simple because it was a matter of taking a consumable. They bought sand that was used in the process that when they were done was non-hazardous, but they would dump it into a rubbish container that would be hauled away. They would pay for it to be hauled away. So, and then they would have these drums, these great 55-gallon line drums that were in really good condition, nice and clean with tops, that some guy would come and pick up for them. You know, he'd pick up 100 drums. He'd bring in a flat load truck. They would put 100 drums on the truck. He'd come pick them up, take them away. And that was a service he provided, you know, for like literally, you know, he would be there like 3 times a week and charge $500 a load. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Both of these didn't make sense. They were charging you under market rates for taking stuff away. So that said to me that there's probably a revenue opportunity here. We ended up turning the cost of hauling away the sand into a revenue source by recycling the sand, which gets bagged into, well, probably end up at Home Depot and Lowe's because it's really fine sand, the kind of sand that you would find like in playgrounds for kids or something like that, as well as these drums, these 55-gallon drums were being sold on the market for minimally $110 a piece. We said, you know what? We'll take 50% of that revenue. So we turned an expense of almost $1 million into a $750,000 revenue swing for this business. And that was just a matter of, like I always say, you know, everybody says, well, they think outside the box. No, I use the Albert Einstein approach, right? If you use the same methodology to get to a solution, trying to find an answer to that solution, you can't use the same methodology. And so that's kind of our theory of how we go about solving problems for clients.
So you've just related to us a couple of different industries. Members of your team come from different disciplines. Is there a particular industry or market that's really your sweet spot? And at the same time, is there a particular business if they called you even today, despite your airplane example at Boeing, as far as stress reduction, is there a particular industry that you'd want to stay away from if anyone called you on that?
That's interesting. I don't know about staying away from any industry. We always try to help people, even if we realize we're not a good fit, and we say fit means finding impact together. If we realize that that doesn't really work for us, you know, a lot of times we'll have a conversation. I don't mind having a 25-minute conversation with someone to realize that we can't be helpful, but I may find some solutions for them that will be helpful. It may not be helpful for us. I mean, our biggest client is Fuji USA Holdings. Okay. They do over $2 trillion a year in revenue as a company, worldwide company. And there's 23 different companies here in the United States. And we work through the holding company, but then we work indirectly for 23 different companies doing finding solutions. Well, one of the companies, we found $2.3 million in overpaid premiums for workman's compensation. You would think a company like that would probably have those kind of issues kind of buttoned up. Not so. However, when they gave us their temporary labor spend to review, which was $12 million a year, they had no idea if all the different companies were using those contracts and if they were getting the right pricing. We found $12,000 in errors. So we handed it back to them and said, here you go. Here's the errors if you want to go collect them yourself or not, that we're okay with that. We also saved them $185,000 a month on their wireless phone bills. They were just on the wrong plan. They have over 8,000 employees, a lot of devices. They were on the wrong plan.
Wow.
So you just don't know what you're going to uncover and what you're going to find. You know, we're always doing different things for them. I've done a sales tax recovery on a manufacturing facility for energy spend that they shouldn't be paying sales tax on. We're doing tariff audits for them. So there's all these different categories and all these different businesses, and a lot of people just need help, but they don't know it.
Wow. So when you engage with a client, are you spending a lot of time at their facility, in their offices, or is this mostly done remote now?
Well, most of, we've always been a virtual company. And so for us, what happened with the pandemic really didn't change how we did business. We probably had an initial meeting, face-to-face meeting, to go over everything at the beginning and sign a contract and what have you. But after that, everything was pretty much done remotely, except for then when we come back with our results, we would then have another meeting to present our results and what our findings are and what we think is best process going forward. So that's changed a little bit, but it saved them money because we don't have to charge them for our travel. And it saved us money because for those we didn't charge for travel, we're not paying for the travel. But our clients are all over the country. I mean, I deal with, right now I'm talking to a large university in Kentucky. We have a city in a medium-sized city in the state of Ohio that we're working with that we found probably about $4.4 million worth of savings for. And, you know, it just, so for us, we'll talk to anybody, Rob, because everybody needs help. And I really don't know if I can help them, but there's a church that came to us. They've about actually five churches down in Missouri that came to us. And while we couldn't help them, I said, well, why are you doing business with this refuge company and this refuge company? Why don't you just do business with the local guys, get rid of the main brand name who's charging you three times what these other guys are charging in these places? Your two churches are like around the corner from each other. Never thought about that.
That's great. So I mean, after talking about the level of savings that you can find and create for your clients, I think a lot of my listeners and viewers right now are probably wondering, that sounds great. Is this going to cost me an arm and a leg? Because I need to reduce expenses, not increase expenses by hiring Mark and expense to profit. So tell us how the fee structure works.
Yeah. So that's the really, we call that our seven-layer win dip, right? First of all, there's no risk to hire us. Our goal is to find savings. And if we do find savings, then we share in the savings. So for every dollar we save, you keep 50 cents and we keep 50 cents. And we manage that process for 24 months. Typically, we'll do a 36-month contract with the vendor, whether it's existing or new. It doesn't matter to us, so that you get that flat pricing, the pricing that you know. And we're gonna monitor that on a monthly basis because that's how we get paid, right? So we know that you bought this much from that vendor. We then provide you a report that shows you that. If pricing doesn't match the contract price that you were promised, we go to the vendor and we say, hey, Mr. Vendor, you priced this wrong. You owe the client $125 credit or whatever the dollar amount would be. Nothing that you have to worry about. So we're another layer in your finance department that's catching errors even before you guys paid any bills. And so that's how we manage it. That's how we get paid. And the bonus is the impact piece that we have is 5% of the fee that we get paid, you as a business get to direct to either a nonprofit or some community event or some kind of a program that you want to sponsor to make yourself a better citizen. And we'll donate that in your name. And of course, you have the option as a business to match that too.
So that sounds to me like the business is actually getting 55% and you're getting 45%.
Well, no, because 5% is going to the nonprofit. We're getting 45%. The business is still getting
50%. What I mean by that is that they're benefiting from
it. Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's correct.
It's done in their brand's name.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, that's wonderful. So, and you mentioned earlier that as far as time consumption, if I were to hire you as opposed to an auditor, with all apologies to my accountant friends who are watching right now, you're not going to come in and require a lot of my time, and I don't need to clear hours and days aside to work with you. You can work independent of my current staff and operation.
Yeah, 100%. So I really need, honestly, for real, our total process is typically an 18-minute presentation to decide whether you want to move forward. Then I need 5 minutes of somebody's time for each category we're going to review. Then we'll come back to you and we'll make a presentation of what we found and present you with what we call our baseline report. Our baseline report shows you what you're spending with the vendor and what we believe the opportunity will be. That's our measuring stick. So you sign off on that. And then once you signed off on that, so now we're into a total, let's say we're doing two categories, that's 10 minutes, 18-minute presentation, and maybe there were a couple questions, we'll say 20, so now we got a half an hour. Now we've got to sit the presentation and the sign off to move forward to another half hour. So you got an hour's worth of time for us to potentially save you 18% of whatever it is that we're looking at. And so if you think about it that way, is it worth an hour of your time if we're looking at $1 million worth of spend to save $180,000? I would suspect it probably is.
I don't think it takes a mathematician like you to answer that question. So I love that, Mark. So Mark, you have been helpful to me and to my business as well. And recently you decided to make your expertise available on a broader scale by publishing your book, Expense to Profit, which became a bestseller quickly. So I really want my viewers and my listeners to be able to have access to that book. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on as a guest, because as I said at the outset, while I try to assist them on the revenue side, I know you can assist them on that expense side that you've been so eloquent about. Talk to us a little bit about your book. Who is it for? Is it for a small business owner? Is it for a major corporation? Who would be reading that? Who's your primary audience?
Yeah. So in the book, I actually lay it out at the very beginning that it's for three different marketplaces, right? It's for someone who's first, you know, it's at $0 to $10 million business that's just trying to get up and running. Some guidelines, some guide rails, so to speak, of things that you can do and shouldn't do. Then it's obviously for the business that's already past that point, that's trying to scale up to the next level between the $10 and $100 million revenue point. And then for the 100 million plus revenue point, because as I mentioned, I even have businesses that do over $1 trillion a year in revenue that we help. So size is not a problem on the upside. For us, you know, we try to concentrate on businesses that are larger, above 10 million, because it takes us just as much time to do a $10 million audit as it does to do a $100 million audit. So for us, it's more economical, obviously, to do larger size businesses. But once again, like I said to you, Rob, I'm happy to offer my services to anybody who has a question and happy to spend a little time with them. I think everybody needs help and I'm willing to do that as well. So the special that we've got for your listeners is we're running 99 cents for the digital version. It'll be the best 99 cents that you spend. Or if you want the paperback version, we've got that right now for $12.99 rather than $20. And so that'll be offered to your Game Change listeners.
Thank you so much.
The great piece about the book is the first couple chapters basically tell you about expense reduction, what it is, what we do, how we do it. Not down to the brass tacks into a lot of different detail, because you can't really put that too much of that in a book. But then I also go through different examples of different clients in areas that we help them across different expense categories. So, and some most common expense categories about how we help them and who we helped. And so I think those are also good lessons for business people to look at, to be able to understand that there are these opportunities.
And I would remind everybody, and again, thank you, Mark, for that, for my listeners and viewers. All of that is available on Amazon, Expense to Profit. Let me ask you, if I could have one takeaway from listening to you today, let's say I've never met you before, I want to tap into your wealth of experience. Is there a common philosophy or strategy or tactic that you find that people who are spending too much in any one category typically share? There's something that commonly we're doing either incorrectly or just naively. It's always an easy find for you.
Yeah. So think of it this way, right? Businesses that are large enough to have a CFO, what is a CFO doing on a daily basis? He's running the business. He's trying to find solutions, but he can't be an expert in every single different spend that a business has. And you've got a lot of spends as a business, especially today, right? You know, you got your whole telecommunications piece, wireless, wired, data, and now remote, right, is a big piece. You've got your benefits and your healthcare and all the stuff that goes along with that, within the insurances. You got your property and cap. I mean, you got all different, each one of these categories has layers and layers and layers of different things. I mean, we found a solution recently for our clients for being able to get rid of their own regulated medical waste on site rather than using a service to take it away. You're going to eliminate the liability costs of having to file with the federal government when medical waste. So everybody's gone to a doctor's office, sees that red box on the wall. Okay. That's a Sharps box. When that box is full, they pull the whole box off. They don't empty the box. The whole Sharps box comes off. It must be regulated and removed by a proper waste system. We now have a device that you can put that into It basically sanitizes it 137 degrees centigrade, grinds it, and you can put that all now in your regular waste stream. Crazy, right? The dollars, it costs about 25% of what it used to cost to have it removed. So we're finding solutions all the time. You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And that's the biggest problem. We've done over 25,000 audits and reviews for clients over the last 10 years. We found over $1 billion in savings. That tells you that we have some kind of information that you're just not going to have. We know what market price is. We have strategies that we use, like reverse auctions. Think about eBay, right? You go to buy something on eBay, it's an auction, right? Price goes up as more people are bidding. How about if you, on a business standpoint, were trying to buy a whole pool of product and price was going down as people were bidding? Reverse auction. Once we get two bidders back at the end and we know they're 1% apart, we know we found market price. You would have never had it if you didn't use that process before. Most people don't even know what it is. So these are the kinds of strategies that we have in our toolbox that we use to help businesses be more successful. And I think the fact of, you know, you don't know what you don't know, it's really true. And there's a lot of businesses that think they know that when we come in, they found out they didn't know so well.
You know, one thing as we wrap up here, Mark, there's a question that's kind of just stirring in my mind right now. I don't know if I can articulate it properly, but my business has always been a service provider. And if we are scrutinized by those who are charged with cutting costs, my frustration may be that it's difficult to judge qualitatively the mm-hmm. value of our service mm-hmm. versus a quantitative judgment, perhaps, of a commodity. So can you help us understand, help me understand, frankly, how does one in your position, or how would you guide someone who's trying to make a decision over in a qualitative sense related to a particular service that you're paying too much for that service that's not producing the ROI you need? Here's another service provider that may be a little bit more expensive, but the ROI is much greater. Is that a discussion that you have both internally and with your clients?
So it's a discussion we certainly can have. It's not a discussion that we actually have very often. However, when a client says, look at everything, and also when we see this big, you know, consulting fee, well, what are you paying? Okay, let's just say that one of our municipalities hired Deloitte to consult with them on different processes. Oh, by the way, we already told them what to do. Our cost, $0. Mm-hmm. But they weren't sure because they didn't pay somebody for the advice. So now they went out and hired Deloitte to tell them the same thing we already told them. Okay. I mean, so Rob, it's hard to quantify. I mean, the bottom line is, like you said, and I think you framed it right, is the value of the services you're getting equivalent to the price that you're paying for the ROI you expect, right? Mm-hmm. What's the issue? How important is it to fix that issue? And what will the impact be once that issue is repaired? And whether that's on the revenue side or on the expense side, that's kind of how we do a measuring stick. And the same thing, you know, what's your return on investment? I mean, like you said, are you better off paying 20% more for a service that gets you 100% better results or paying the lower cost service? Well, I think, once again, that's probably a pretty easy answer. But we find in practice, as you're aware, not many people subscribe to that. It's like when governments bid for, what do they call it? They call it lowest and best. You buy best at lowest. So if I can buy best at lowest, isn't that a better solution than lowest at best?
Yeah.
Right?
Mark, you know this better than I do, but I've often said that cheap is expensive.
Oh, 100%, because cheap, you're going to have to do cheap again.
Yeah.
Maybe again and again.
Yeah. And not to mention the morale that could be, that it could cost you, the goodwill that it can cost you among your exterior audience, you know, your external customers. So yeah, cheap can be very expensive. So what I'm hearing you say is you may not come in and make the recommendation of the cheapest option. Your expense to profit is all about making the recommendation to get the most out of your money.
Well, not only the most out of your money, but the best solution for the client. Okay. And even we may find a better solution, it's still the client's choice to make that change. They may not want to make that change. We've had that plenty of times. We found a better solution. They say, no, we like what we got. Okay. Well, we'll just reduce price then. Okay. Yeah, yep. We're happy to do that for you. It's your call. You're the client. Our job is to satisfy you, the client. I mean, we'll make less, but okay, well, that happens. We're willing to take that risk. That's part of our business model.
Sure. Well, I like what I'm getting from you here, Mark. Once again, every time I talk to you, I learn something more about my own business and how I can run it more efficiently. Last thing, if you would, give us a takeaway for today. So we've listened to this podcast, we've watched it on YouTube. How can we make today a little bit better because of something you can teach us right now? What's your tip of the day for people to run more efficient, more cost-effective businesses?
So I typically ask a business owner, what is the check they hate writing most every month, right? And most often these days, it seems to be healthcare-related expenses. So my suggestion is, if you're using an insurance agent, that's the wrong solution. You want to be using a consultant, an insurance consultant, or someone who can consult and really review what are you offering your clients. Now, why do I say that? Government contractor that I've mentioned before about the hanky-panky. We looked at what they were doing on their health insurance. They had three different plans, like most people do, an HMO, a middle tier, and then a high tier. Who's in the high tier? Business owner. One person. Oh, by the way, when we did the analytics, it was costing them $150,000 a year to offer that. Here's your business improvement. Here's your benefit for an employee. We took the HMO, left it alone. We took the middle tier, made that the top tier. We then took and created a new middle tier. Do you think the employees were ecstatic they were now in the highest tier for their benefits? It cost nothing for them. Oh, and by the way, when we removed that top tier, it saved the business $150,000 a year. Okay, and so it cost us about $18,000 to buy a special program for the business owner. So what? Didn't matter. It's still net $132,000. And the employees were ecstatic that they were now in the best plan. And oh, by the way, we created a new tier. Some of them then moved to the middle tier, saved more money for the business, which was a combination type solution. So there's a lot of different things you can do. We're not insurance agents. We can't sell it. So you have to have an agent sell it. But we can find the solution that's going to help bring everybody a better environment and a happier employee base.
Well, Mark, this podcast is themed around our ability to influence and persuade and inspire people. So a lot of what you've said today has influenced my thinking. It persuades me to think differently and to take action. And I'm kind of inspired in some areas. I hope my audience is as well. I'd remind them, go out and get your book. Your ebook is available for 99 cents at Amazon. And your hard copy, your paperback, as you said, you're going to make available to us at $12.99, also on Amazon. That's Expense to Profit by Mark Friedman. And I would encourage people to let Mark know that you're a Game Face Execs listener. And you'll treat him a little bit better then, won't you, Mark?
Of course. Always. Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure for you, Rob.
Well, thank you, Mark. I look forward to our next conversation, which will be soon, I'm sure. And thanks for all the great work you do and all the savings you bring businesses that need it most right now.
Thank you, Rob.
If you run a business or department, which check are you writing every month that you hate the most? Are you confident, for example, that you're not paying more than you have to on your phone plan? What about your health insurance, your daily operating expenses, transportation, waste management? The list goes on. Catch more of Mark's expertise by joining us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or whichever platform you prefer. Mark exhumes expenses to help his clients get extraordinary profits. Thanks for being a part of this episode of Game Face Execs. If you found any of it useful or helpful, please rate or like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. I always appreciate you referring us to others as well. I'll see you next week. Until then, persuade, influence, inspire.